You're listening to Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things. Here's your host, Sam Marcoux.
Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things once again. This is the 50th episode of Predictably Drunk. That is a lot of smart people talking about a lot of stupid things, ladies and gentlemen. But we did it. Both Matt and myself have made it to episode number 50, aka the Golden Podcast, if you will. And what better way to spend your Golden Podcast than to recap the other 49 episodes that we've already done? That's right, ladies and gentlemen, we are recycling content and spitting it back out. We have force-fed you 49 episodes of stuff, and we're now going to regurgitate it and spit it back into your mouths again. Not all 49 episodes, of course, but some of the highlights from the last year and a half or so that Matt and I have spent sitting on our asses talking to each other, as well as talking to people of all walks of life, comedians, obviously, comic book illustrators, medical personnel, porn stars. We've had porn stars on this show. We've had professional musicians on the show. We've had other podcasters on the show. It's been a whirlwind of activity ever since we started this little podcast that could. So we figured what better way to celebrate our minor accomplishment of 50 podcasts than to force you to listen to this shit all over again, right? And let's just get right into it. The first highlight here is actually the very first guest in Predictably Drunk history. And of course, I'm talking about Jeremy Curry on episode 3. And the reason why Jeremy Curry is so important to this show and important to me as a comedian is, A, he got me started in stand-up comedy. You can't help but just absolutely love the dude. Like, I don't know how you can hate a guy. Like, even if you hate him, you love to hate him, if that makes any sense. The dude is just like a loud, obnoxious teddy bear that you want to slap across the face and at the same time give him a big old hug and a kiss. And I think that comes out in the very first interaction that he had on the show here with Predictably Drunk. I was interviewing him and I was introducing him for the interview, and I was giving him all of these compliments. I was showering him with all kinds of praise, and I said the word incomparable, which is not too hard of a word to understand unless you're Jeremy fucking Curry, and then it's impossible to understand. So just take a listen to this clip. You'll understand why Jeremy Curry is the guy that he is and puts a smile on your face when you talk to him about some of the silliest things ever. And speaking of which, Predictably Drunk has its first guest, and that is the incomparable, the lovely, the wonderful Bay Area legend himself, Mr. Jeremy Curry. Jeremy, say hello.
Hello, everybody. How you doing? Thank you, Sam, for having me. Of course, the first word you complimented me was on incomparables. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, Jeremy's now Googling all the words I use.
Is that a good one?
I don't even know.
Say something good?
I think I meant to say incompetent, but I said it wrong.
What does incomparable mean?
It means that there's nobody that can compare to you.
That. That's good. Thank you.
Yeah. No, so Jeremy, for those that don't know Jeremy Curry, God, where do I start? Where do I start with Jeremy Curry?
Where do you start?
I don't know.
Met you at the gym?
I met Jeremy Curry about, 14 years ago?
At a gym?
At a gym.
Shocking!
At a gym.
You and I are at a gym.
Yeah, yeah. We must have been lost on our way to the bar.
For directions.
Which way to the bar?
Yeah.
We were looking for a guy named Jim, and we got confused.
Yeah, the gym.
So, yeah, no, we met a long time ago, and then we had a long, not a falling out, we didn't know each other well enough.
We didn't have Facebook.
That's true.
We could not connect.
We did not have Facebook.
If you had Facebook, Sam, we'd have known each other a long time.
Now, here's the thing, so I was at a Raiders game. I was at an Oakland Raiders game with my sister, Stacy.
And the Bears.
Because we got free tickets. And we left, and we went to a bar afterwards, Buffalo Wild Wings. And I'm walking. This is about 10 years after I met Jeremy. And Jeremy, for those that don't know, is a huge Miami Dolphins fan.
Unfortunately,
so he's got good taste. He also happens to be a Los Angeles Lakers fan, so he's got good taste.
And a Braves.
And he's
fan,
an Atlanta or? Braves fan, which means 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Oh God, the Dodgers.
But yeah, the Dodgers.
The Dodgers.
Yeah, both of us suck again. Fuck John Smoltz. But I'm walking through Buffalo Wild Wings. You know, I've been drinking, obviously, and I see this guy in a 1994 pro player parka, hunched over,
That's
looking
a great
depressed.
Jacket, man. It's waterproof, man. I could take that thing anyway. And it's dark, so if I spill it myself.
He's wearing it now in 2015.
Yeah, I'm still wearing it. I wear it to bed.
So I go, hey, that's a great jacket. And I hear, hey, thanks, man. Thanks very much. And I'm like, holy shit, I know that sad sack of shit voice anywhere. And the first thing, I go to the bathroom, and I'm like, okay, I know this guy. And for some reason, I remember his name. So I go back to him, and he's sitting with his friends, and I go, excuse me, this is going to be a weird question, but is your name Jeremy Curry? And he looks at me, and he turns more white than he is normally. And he goes, how much money do I owe you?
I made some bad decisions.
So right then, I knew we were going to be friends for a while. Then I asked him how much he had on him, and that's exactly how much.
I knew it wouldn't be enough.
Yeah.
God.
So we apparently swapped info, which is always good when you go to a bar and you get another dude's information, right?
Yeah.
That's how that works.
That's how it works for us.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
That's how it works in the comedy business.
Tell a joke. No, doesn't matter.
This next clip is from Phil Johnson. Phil Johnson is a fellow comedian. One of the first guests that we actually had on the show after I started this thing up. In fact, Matt Somerville wasn't even a co-host yet at this point, wasn't even a guest on the show at this point. But Phil Johnson came by and actually brought his acoustic guitar, because he happens to be a musician as well, and serenaded us, both you and I, the audience, with an original song that he wrote after being invited to a co-ed baby shower, which, by the way, ladies, stop fucking doing that. Don't force your man to do that. That's so wrong. Just you have the baby shower and let him leave and go get drunk with his friends and bitch about having to have a kid with you by himself. He doesn't have to be there. He shouldn't have to force his friends to be there. That is the male version of rape right there, is forcing your male partner to force his friends to show up to your stupid little baby shower. And this is what happens when you invite somebody like Phil Johnson, who can tell a joke and write a song and put them together and ruin your baby shower. So let this be a lesson to you ladies out there. Let your man run free one last time before you squeeze out that prison baby of yours. All right, take a listen to this clip.
So this is a song. This is actually in my new special. It's I got invited to a co-ed baby shower, and which is a horrible idea.
Terrible.
Terrible.
I've done it myself.
Yeah, and my friend, she was like, oh, will you write a song for my baby about the miracle of childbearing? And I was like, wow, you've never heard my songs before. So here's what I came up with. A little baby, you were brought here through a miracle and a broken condom. I didn't know sperm carried knives. And somehow you got by the IUD, the diaphragm, the spermicide, and a morning after pill. But if daddy hadn't been so drunk, and mommy hadn't run out of batteries, if daddy pulled out on time, instead of thinking about Angelina Jolie, then baby you wouldn't be here. You'd have been wiped up with a towel. Little baby, will your new life be a happy one? Or will you make your money putting sausage between your buns? Will you be a great man who brings peace to all the land? Or the type of guy that lures kids into a big white cargo van? And since you're pretty scary, I'm really glad that you're not mine. And I guess I'm pretty happy that your mommy cheated on me this time. So go ahead and be just as evil as you wanna be. Hell yes, I dodged that bullet and I'm free.
This clip comes from Christopher Pilney, and I don't know if a lot of people listen to this episode or not, because you might not know who Christopher Pilney is, as the majority of my audience is here on the West Coast. Christopher Pilney is actually a humorist living in Nashville, Tennessee, very good writer, blogger, actually spent an entire year of his life working at Victoria's Secret as a straight male, and had some hilarious stories that he wrote about on his website, and I think got published on some pretty big magazines and websites across the entire world. I think he was writing articles like, you know, how to properly fold a thong and things of that nature. Just funny, funny stuff. So I had him on the air to talk about not only that, but just some of the stuff, like his thought process on life, because this is a guy who was originally from the New England area, moved to Nashville, Tennessee to be a country singer, except for one small minor detail. He had no idea how to sing. He just figured he would show up to Nashville and be a country western star. I guess that's how he thought it worked. Once he realized that that wasn't going to happen, he decided that he would be a travel writer. He would just travel around the world and write about it. Although, again, much like the country thing, he had not traveled anywhere and hadn't really written anything at this point of his career. So obviously a guy who kind of maybe makes snap judgments, I think it's fair to say. But nonetheless, this clip I pulled from that interview is actually about him in college, where he sat down on his very first day of college next to, believe it or not, a Tennessee Titans cheerleader. So a smoking hot chick. And well, I won't spoil it, but just listen to the clip. You'll see what happens to him. It obviously did not end well.
There's an article on there. If you guys are listening to this and you want to go to Christopher Pilney, just click around. You'll find all kinds of interesting stuff. But he's got an article on there about, was it your first day of college and a nice pretty girl came up to you, and what happened?
Okay. So this is literally 1 month after the boob ordeal. Like, this is before I work at Victoria's Secret. So I'm thinking, oh great, a new semester, a new start to my life. Like, this is going to be awesome. And so I go into biochemistry. It's like 8 o'clock in the morning. And I'm sitting next to one pretty girl, and then behind me is a Tennessee Titans cheerleader who was exotic and, you know, gorgeous. And
exotic is code word for not white, I assume.
I would not say she's white, but she was stunning.
At least dark hair.
Dark hair, dark eyes. Anyways. So I'm sitting there thinking, okay, my odds are looking really good right now. This is awesome. And like 10 minutes into class, I start feeling my stomach gurgle, which is never a good sign. And that's the thing about 8 a.m. classes is, like, my pooping schedule is usually at like between 8 or 9, somewhere in there. So this is like prime, you know, pooping time. And I'm sitting there starting to gurgle, and I'm like, oh, I gotta fart. So it's like 90% of the time it's not that bad. But as I let this one go, it like burnt my asshole, and I knew that it was not gonna be good. And so I sat there, and I mean, this might be like in my top five like most vile rips I've ever done. The only other the one that tops it, I think, once is one that would have made my girlfriend stop the car and get out of the car one time.
It's a proud moment in any man's life,
dude. Epic. Anyways, so I'm sitting there, and it smells, and I'm like, oh, man. Well, you know, it's like being on an airplane though. It's like, well, there are a lot of people around me. They're not going to know exactly who it is, and I'm like, it'll be gone in like a minute. So I'm sitting there. I'm like, 2 minutes. 3 minutes, 4 minutes, it's still lingering. And I'm like, what is going on? 7 minutes, it's still lingering. Still smells like shit. 10 minutes, still lingering. I'm really starting to worry. And I think what I compare it to in the story, I love Jurassic Park, and it feels a lot like when Samuel L. Jackson's character goes to try to, you know, restart the power. And he doesn't come back, and Ellie Sattler is like, something's wrong, something's happened, something's wrong. And that's how I start feeling. And so I like shifted, and when I shifted, I felt a little squish.
Oh.
And I immediately was like, oh no, I shat my pants. And it was like, and it wasn't even that I shat my pants, but I had borrowed my roommate's jeans. Mine were dirty. So I shat in his jeans. And I actually still own them. It's the only pair of jeans I still have, but I still own them. They're amazing.
So you shit in your gay roommate's pants.
He's not gay. He's not gay. I will say that. He's straight.
You guys own a hot tub. Come on, clearly. okay, so just to recap, you're sitting next to a very exotic Tennessee Titans cheerleader and another very good-looking girl. Your first semester of your new year of college. And the first thing that your body does, other than grow boobs, is to literally shit your friend's pants.
Yep, I shit my friend's pants.
Oh my God. We might be related. No, that's that.
I am French. I am French by descent. So there is quite a possibility. I'm a Dufour. I know you're a Marcoux. So maybe there's something far back there, but there is a possibility.
Yeah, we probably both gave up on something at some point in our lives. So sure.
One of the more controversial interviews I did was with the porn star Dave Pounder. I'm sure I'll give you a minute to Google him right now. Yes, he is a porn star. Yes, he was on the show. And yes, we talked about porn, because why else would you have a porn star on the air other than to talk about it, right? And this is a short clip. This is a clip where Dave talked about the weirdest things he was asked to do in porn. If you guys are afraid of clowns, maybe skip this clip. It's going to be about a minute long, and jump onto the next one, because yes, it does involve clown fucking. But look, man, it's Predictably Drunk. Smart people talking about stupid things, including fucking clowns, apparently. So have at it.
So what is the strangest thing you've been asked to do or that you performed in porn? Is there just something you're like, wow, that one's going to go in the old scrapbook when I'm done with this career?
Yeah, there was one called Clown Porn. That was funny. They dressed the girls up as clowns, and like I'm like sleeping in the bed, and they were the maid service, and they come in, and I'm having sex with these two female clowns, which is interesting.
You're talking like big red noses and yeah, like green afros. Oh, yeah, and shit like that?
White makeup and the color hair. It was some fetish site. It was cool, though. I had fun doing it. You know, the girls had nice bodies. You can't really see their faces with the whole makeup and stuff. And then another one that I didn't do, because I'm not in the fat girls, was a fetish site called Feed Me, Fuck Me. And what you do is you basically, these ginormous, like 300-pound girls, you feed them cheeseburgers while you have sex with them. And I'm just like, yeah, it's not really my thing.
That sounds amazing. I'd be a 300-pound fat chick, or at least put a wig on if I could get cheeseburgers and get fucked. That's amazing.
I know, right? But it's
This next clip is actually from my co-host, Matt Somerville, before he was a co-host. This is back when he was just a guest, a measly puke of a guest, Matt Somerville. And he was telling a story about how he loves Keanu Reeves and how his wife loves Keanu Reeves. In fact, Keanu is on her get out of jail free fuck list that all relationships seem to have with famous people, where there's a list of like 3 to 5 folks on that list that if they were ever to come in contact with those people sexually, their partners could not get mad at them. But this is pretty funny, because Matt Somerville's wife, Stacy, actually had Keanu Reeves on her list. And ironically enough, Matt Somerville, who works in Hollywood and deals with a lot of movie stars and TV stars and stand-up comedians and things of that nature, actually ended up working with Keanu Reeves on set for a couple of days. And he tells a pretty funny story about how Keanu Reeves was just fucking with him, and tends to fuck with people day in and day out because he's Keanu Reeves and he can do that. So pretty funny clip. And I think you'll see the early chemistry of Matt and I, and why he later became the official co-host of Predictably Drunk.
Your wife, Stacy, she is in love with Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
That's the funniest joke I've ever heard in my life.
No, he's Keanu. I'm almost gay for Keanu.
Oh, I hate you. You know, you used to rip on everybody, and now that you're friends with all these Hollywood elite, you're just kissing ass and doing the good cocaine and leaving
the dirty shit
for the rest of us.
That's correct. You don't get the good cocaine because you don't deserve it. No, that is a joke, by the way.
I totally deserve it.
I have trashed people. I continue to trash people, just like everybody else, in a joking and fun way. But
you should hear what he says about Dane Cook off the air. It's
Dane, if you're listening, man, I love you and enjoy your money. No, I'm kidding.
He loves you, Dane. He's told me that millions and millions of times.
I do. But Keanu is the is one that I have always defended, even before moving here, even before working where I work and doing what I do. I've always defended him. Like, I get the criticism of Keanu Reeves a lot, and I understand that in certain aspects of his career, but I've always been such a big fan of his. And then, of course, when I met him and saw, like, he's basically, the real him is basically what you would think it is, and it's so awesome. It's just equal parts fucking great dude and just hilarious and completely random, and I don't think that there's an actual word that describes it all other than, like he's so fucking Keanu. Like that, it sounds probably stupid to everyone listening to this right now, but only when you meet him do you understand what that could possibly mean, and he nails the Keanu.
Do you think he's fucking with people? Do you think like he understands what his reputation is, so therefore he's going to be, he's like an Andy Kaufman?
I don't think he goes on to public talk shows and directly fucks with people or anything like that, or takes a role and says, I'm going to do this with this. But I think, in person and with the people that he's talking to, he probably fucks with. I think he fucked with me a little bit, to be honest.
Well, you're Canadian. That's easy.
Well, he's Canadian too, though.
Is he really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, I found that out a day before I went to go meet him, and I'll tell this quick story. I was smoking a cigarette. We were out in the desert, and we were shooting this little spot at this racetrack, and so I'm just outside one of the garages, and I'm smoking a cigarette, and I see him walking up to me. And I mean, he wasn't walking up to me. He was just, he was just
towards
in my direction,
you, and you got in his way. Yeah,
and I was like, hey, I hear you're a fellow Canuck, and he's like, yeah, and I say, cool, me too, man. I'm from Mississauga, and he's like, oh, and then he goes to walk around the corner where like the rest of the crew is, and he just says very loudly, he's like, Mississauga, and then he just keeps walking, and I'm like, that, it seems like he's fucking with me a little bit there.
That's good. I now like Keanu Reeves, and I forgive him for all those terrible Matrix movies outside of the first one.
He's great.
All right, this next clip happens to be a clip of one of my favorite comedians to do comedy with. She is Chelsea Bierce. We actually recorded this at Cobb's Comedy Club in the green room, the new and improved green room, which, for my opinion, Cobb's, I think I actually did this. I did a list episode on here of the best green rooms in the Bay Area, and Cobb's is by far number one. It's big, it's roomy. They stockpile it with Red Bull and water and whatever you want in there in the green room. And Chelsea and I actually got together in the green room after her set and after my set and sat down and had like a nice 25 minute conversation, which to this day is still the number one most downloaded podcast in Predictably Drunk history. It was a huge hit, and that has to do with Chelsea, who's got a big following in New York where she was doing comedy, in Los Angeles where she was doing comedy, and now here in the Bay Area where she's doing comedy and stage work, and actually about to take on the biggest role of her life as a mother. I swear to God, she's been pregnant for like 2 years. It feels like she's been pregnant for a long time, but she hasn't. She's actually going to be a great mom, and I'm hoping that it'll make her and force her to write good material about being a mother, because I think that's lacking in the Bay Area scene. But if anybody can pull that off, it's going to be her. So take a listen to this. This is actually her talking about her humongous boobs and the pros and cons of being a well-endowed lady and everything she's got to put up with. So if you like boobs and you like funny chicks, this is the clip for you. Now, you do a great thing, I think, on stage. And I've seen a lot of comedians in the years that I've done comedy. And beyond just the race thing, beyond just being a female in a male-dominated area, you're also very well-endowed.
Yes. Yeah. I have huge boobs.
Yeah,
you can see
your boobs?
My boobs are G-cup.
G-cup.
G.
Those are big.
Right.
Yeah, D is considered, I would think, big.
Yeah, even when people say double D, it's like this big thing. No, I was a double D in, like, sixth grade.
Like, your boobs are so big that they're not even a grade in school. Like, you're
right.
A G.
Right.
That's humongous.
Yes.
So beyond that, what's great about your comedy and what's great about you and your personality is that you don't shy away from these things. You talk about the fact that you're mixed race on stage. You talk about your chest on stage. And you know what? I think it's smart because it's what, like, if nobody has ever seen you before.
Exactly. Right.
They're going to make assumptions whether they want to or not about who you are and what you do. Like,
right.
I'm an overweight white guy. So people are like, okay, he likes, I don't know, fucking Limp Bizkit and football, which I love football and Limp Bizkit, so they're absolutely right. But you have to, like, there's one, you can either shy away from it or you can just address it head on. And you have that mentality on stage, which I think is amazing, is you're just like, I've got big boobs. I'm mixed race. I'm a girl. Let's talk about
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and I think I have to because everyone's going to be thinking that.
Yeah.
And there's a stigma that comes with female comedians, whether they want to believe it or not, that we're not funny. People think that female comics are not as funny as men.
So one of the things that you get as a compliment, and it's got to be a backhanded compliment, is you're funny for
yes.
a girl.
Right. 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 Or you're, and I've gotten, you're too like cute or pretty to be a comic. There's no way that you can make it because you're a female and you're pretty. And I'm like, okay, so that's nice. But I'm going to go on stage and I'm going to talk about the elephant in the room.
Sure.
It just happens to be attached to my body. Right. You know, so I just happen to be harnessing it with a bra. So I have to talk about that because it's going to be the first thing people notice.
Yeah.
If I don't bring it up, they're going to be staring at them until my whole show is over. They're not going to hear a word that I said. I have to get it out the first minute or two that I'm on stage so that we can go on to something else. That's it.
So what's the worst thing just in, you know, maybe as being a comic or even just in life when you're big chested like that? And I grew up with a mom who's got a large bust. I've got sisters who have a large bust.
Yeah.
And I grew up with nothing but females. Even the dogs and cats were fucking female.
Right.
Like that's my entire life. I have a daughter who's obviously a girl. Like, what's the worst thing about having, like, I guess, boobs that big? I mean, is it shopping? Is it the stigma that comes with having big boobs? Because I imagine guys look at you and go, she's not smart or she's not funny as
right.
a comic.
Right.
You know, doesn't have a brain or head. She's yeah. just a body. Is that the worst or is there something else?
I've gotten all of that. And there's pros and cons about all of this. Shopping is terribly hard. I can't yeah. have a button-up shirt. I can't, you know, like, I mean, I can't wear a halter. I can't, like, there's things that you can't do,
yeah.
you know, but that's fine. Who cares? But I also am very conscious about when I go outside because I have to cover up.
Sure.
So sometimes I'll dress, you know, way warmer than I should because of the weather outside, but I don't want to be accosted that day. You know, yeah. I don't want to be raped in an alley. So it's like, I'll wear a fucking jacket.
You.
Right.
Yeah.
So things like that are, I'm just very aware of them. And it's such, so second nature to me that it's not really a burden anymore. It's yeah. just how I live my life, you know? So that kind of sucks. But to be honest, what really sucks is my back pain.
Oh yeah.
That's if we're gonna thing. Be if we're gonna be honest here, yeah, it's, I mean, they are heavy as shit. So, you know, when I say that on stage, I'm not lying. Everything yeah. that I say is totally true. I actually wrote a parody about it. Have you seen my parody?
I haven't seen it yet, but you have a great joke on stage about how your boobs are so heavy that one time you knew they were heavy because you were you were having sex with a guy
yeah.
and it popped out of the guy's mouth and broke his
and
clavicle.
Cracked his clavicle, cracked it.
Yeah. That's a great joke.
Yeah, I love that.
I mentioned earlier that Jeremy Curry was a big influence in me starting in comedy and actually was the very first guest on this podcast. And Jeremy Curry tends to be my lab rat or my guinea pig for any new venture that I try, whether it's video, audio, or anything else in between. There's another influence in the podcasting realm for me, which is why I chose this clip more than anything else. I think it fits the show appropriately. This is Predictably Drunk, and both myself and Michael Gilkison on Cinco de Mayo of 2015 sat down in the Predictably Drunk studios and started playing a game called Drinko, which is a lot like Plinko from The Price is Right, where we have these little tokens and we drop them down in between a plate of glass that's got these little, you know, planks, and it bounces off all the little pegs and then lands at the bottom into a bunch of different shot glasses. So what Michael and I did is we filled them up with apple juice, water, and or tequila. And we put them all in at the bottom of this Drinko board and started sliding the little coins down. And whatever shot glass it landed into, we then had to take that shot glass and just pound it right then and there. So we didn't know if we were getting a placebo or if we were getting the real deal with the different types of tequila that we had at the bottom of this. So this was actually a lot of fun. And the reason why I brought up all that stuff about him being influential is Michael Gilkison actually is a comedian originally from Kentucky, who eventually relocated up here to the Bay Area and actually invited me onto his podcast, the wildly popular In the Galaxy podcast, primarily focuses on music and technology. But every now and then they do these kind of wild card episodes. And I went on there as a guest, had a blast with him and his co-host, Jay Williams, who's also been a guest here on Predictably Drunk. You can check out that episode. I think it's called Greatest American Rock Bands. But anyways, point is, I had a blast on their podcast. I think I've been a guest on their podcast three or four times at this point. I'll go on anytime they ask me to do it. it because it's so much fun. And it's actually one of the big reasons I started getting into podcasting myself. I had so much fun just shooting the breeze with them and having such a laid back sort of conversation that was entertaining that it kind of inspired me to start doing Predictably Drunk as a podcast. So if you like this show, if you like me, you like my comedy, and you're listening to this, first of all, thank you. And second of all, thank Michael Gilkison and Jay Williams, because they're a big influence as to why I got into this podcast game in the first place. So take a listen to this and then go support those guys over at In the Galaxy.
We have sitting in front of us Drinko, which is like Plinko from The Price is Right. You drop the little tablets down, the little pegs here, and at the bottom of Drinko we have six different shot glasses. Now, it is Cinco de Mayo, my friend, so since you drink anything and everything, what I've done here is I've given us the game of Drinko, where three of these have some sort of tequila in them, Cazadores, Ca, different types of tequila, and three of them are just plain old apple juice or water, depending on the types of tequila I put
in
here.
Is it Justin Timberlake's tequila is what I want to know.
Well, it's going to be May. It is May, so possibly. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the magic token here.
Kentucky Blue one.
Yeah, I'm going to give you the Kentucky Blue. You're going to drop it into the Drinko, and then whatever it lands in is what you're going to take a shot of, whether it's water or tequila. And then I will do the same. And what we're going to do is we're going to knock these six shot glasses down to zero at some point.
Oh, I love it. I tell you my strategy I'm going in with this. I'm going to smell which ones.
No, you're not allowed to smell.
I'm not allowed to smell.
No smelling. This is almost a blind taster, because smelling is cheating. So what you're going to do is you're just going to drop it in, and that's the only senses you're going to use, and then you're going to go taste buds. You're going to know before you drink
it.
Is
that what your last girlfriend told you?
Yes.
Was smelling was cheating?
That's right. That's why I'm single.
Too much smelling.
Too many smellings. So, okay.
House rules.
Here we go. House rules, exactly. Studio rules. So feel free to...
I'm going to pretend like it's East San Jose, and I'm going to look at which one's the brownest.
So he's dropping it in by the D on Drinko, so the left-hand side of the board, the playing board. It goes down. Oh, and he got the I in Drinko. So it's kind of a clearish liquid.
Ooh, there's some tequila.
Is that one tequila? You weren't supposed to smell it, so now go ahead. Drink the worm. Let's see.
I'm afraid I'm going to swallow this blue LSD tablet that you put in there.
Well,
is there anything else on this?
If that's an LSD tablet, this is going to be a very long podcast. Because
it'd be a lot cooler than it was.
So that was
pure tequila.
That was absolutely a tequila shot right there. Very well done.
Yeah, baby.
Very well done. So we have one down, which means
that's where you've been
strategically. And I made these, but I actually forgot where all of them went. So I'm going to go ahead and put one down too. I've got the white tablet here for South San Jose, if you will. Very racist show tonight, I've noticed. And my strategy, I'm going to go over here. I'm going to go between the N and the K when I drop it into the Plinko here.
Oh, you got exactly.
And
what
I got the
end. I think you've been practicing, Mister. I don't smell that.
I see bubbles at the bottom of this.
That looks just like pure water.
Is that water? Well, I'm not going to smell that. I have the end, so we're going to go with this and see what happens here. And that was in fact water. So that did nothing for me. Although it was San Jose water, so that's probably
probably a lot of stuff.
It's probably worse for me than the tequila you just drank.
One of my cousins growing up, you want me to drop this in here?
If you want to do it again, or we can wait, we can do whatever you want to do. However you want to do it. You want to tell a story and drop one in?
If you mess around with me doing this, we're going to keep refilling these. It's going to just turn into
We've got four more to do, so why don't you go ahead and drop another one in there and see what happens.
So, when I was a little kid in Kentucky, one of my cousins, I was like,
oh,
it's stuck.
It got stuck.
I'm going to flick it.
Flick. There you go. Flick it to kick it.
One of my cousins came up to me, and I was like 10 or 11. I was very young. It's like right at that point where you're kind of learning about sex. And my cousin was like a Matthew McConaughey. Like, he talked exactly like Matthew McConaughey, and he was fucking cool like Matthew McConaughey, too.
Yeah.
And he called me Big Mac.
Hey.
Big what? Mac.
Oh, Big Mac.
Like the burger. My dad said it was like a Mack truck. But I said it was, you know, somebody else. I was fat, too, so they said it was like McDonald's. So it's kind of a double entendre. But he gave me advice about, he's like, Big Mac, you want to hear some advice about women? If it smells good, don't do it. If it smells bad, don't do it. But if it smells like nothing at all, go ahead, brother.
And that is some Kentucky logic if I've ever heard it there. So what did you do? You just got the R in Drinko.
That R was apple juice.
That was an apple juice R. So
apple bottom juice.
So we now have three left, and we have two that are tequila and one that's a water / apple juice. So I'm actually, I think based on this, I know where one of the tequilas is. So I'm going to cheat a little bit.
Restack?
We can restack.
We've got a D, a K, and an O. I figure we should like...
You want to put them in the middle?
We should put the O where the I is.
Okay.
That way we'd have D-I-K.
So now we have Doc here. There we go. All right. So that way... All right. That makes a little more sense. I'm going to go over here.
That's what she said.
I'm going to go over here. And I missed, but I was going for the K. So I'm going to go ahead and pull that one.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
All right. So I'm pulling the K. I think this...
That looks like water.
I'm pretty sure it looks like water, but based on what just hit my nose, I'm almost positive it's not. So we'll take a shot of this poison here. And
have you heard of that Justin Timberlake tequila? Have you seen those commercials?
No, but I'm sure if Justin Timberlake is touching it, and that was tequila, it's probably going to be gold or platinum. That dude, does that dude do anything wrong? I want to hate that guy so much for being in NSYNC, you know, deflowering Britney Spears back in the day when she was just the hottest thing in the world.
You don't know that he deflowered her.
He absolutely did. She said she did. It was him.
Oh,
anyways.
Really?
Yeah. And
well,
then,
you really have been studying.
Oh, yeah. I was a Britney Spears fan. And then he goes on Saturday Night Live and kills it. He's funny as hell.
Yes.
He's a great actor. Dude probably has a humongous dick because that's what fucking life is fair, right? Like, he just needs more breaks than everybody else.
And this is when the show really started to hit its stride, in my opinion, late 2015. This is right around the time that it started cooking in my head that Matt Somerville, who had now been a guest on my podcast, Predictably Drunk, multiple times, was probably going to be the permanent co-host, and it was no longer going to be my podcast. It was going to be our podcast, which I was totally fine with, and more than fine with. Obviously, it was my idea. But this is an episode that has both Matt Somerville, myself, and Steve Curry. Now, Steve Curry's been on the podcast 3 or 4 times. Anybody who knows me probably knows Steve Curry. The guy's a lunatic. The guy's a nut. The guy is a paramedic. This is the guy that you call when you have an issue medically out in the field somewhere in San Francisco. This is the guy who shows up. And this clip is actually from our Hates Giving Day Parade episode, which we recorded the week of Thanksgiving. And basically the premise behind this is that the three of us got together and we just started discussing everything that we hate. And the reason for that is that's around the time that everyone starts getting together and they sit around the table and they go around telling everybody what they're thankful for. And we decided, fuck that. This is Predictably Drunk. This is smart people talking about stupid things. We're going to talk about the things that we hate. I think the boys are talking about they're fighting over whether popcorn is good or bad. And I just kind of jumped in towards the end to discuss what I hated as well. But very fun episode. I think, again, this is kind of where the show itself really kicked into the next gear in terms of listenership, in terms of quality, in terms of content, in terms of just everything. It's this is right around the time that this show started taking off and becoming an actual thing. So there you go. Listen to the Hates Giving Day Parade, and we'll see you after this clip.
Popcorn is an issue for you. Why?
Popcorn is the most disgusting thing I think I've ever eaten in my life.
What do you eat during
a
movie?
I put a lot of weird things in my mouth. If anybody's ever met me, they know.
What do you eat during a movie? What is the go-to snack?
Oh, Sour Patch Kids.
Okay. All right. I like Sour Patch Kids.
Sour Patch Kids are good. Or nothing.
This isn't things we like. This is things we hate. So why don't we explore the popcorn, and then we'll get back to Sour Patch Kids on the Happy Lucky Go Hour.
Let's go with movie popcorn. First of all, you're paying $15 for a bag of this thing.
Agreeable.
Second of all, who knows how long it's been sitting around popping in that machine. This is just movie popcorn, right? Then they put that fake butter on there.
Mm-hmm.
It tastes like futter. They put the futter in there. Each piece that has it's either got nothing on it or it's got too much futter on it, and it tastes like a loogie going down your throat.
That's disgusting.
Is that not? Is that just my?
No, that's
it's pretty accurate. Valid. It's pretty valid. Other than that, it tastes like styrofoam. Gets stuck in your teeth, and then our whole time you're trying to dig it out of the center of your teeth the whole time until it finally makes a raw spot in the side of your mouth or your tongue, and then for the next 3 days you're hating life with a big hole in the side of your mouth.
Okay, so I can agree with paying money for an eventual dental visit. Like, that makes a lot of sense, and the price is outrageous. Yeah, that's true. But God damn it, it tastes like happiness.
Have you ever bit into one that the kernel's like half popped?
Oh, like the teeth, the toothbreaker.
Yeah, the toothbreaker.
Yeah.
You bite, you think it's goodness. That was probably the last piece I ever had, and it snapped. I actually had some dental work done, and it cracked it completely in half.
Other things that we hate, Bazooka Joe bubblegum.
Oh.
When I was a child, I bit into Bazooka Joe bubblegum, and my tooth snapped in half. And thankfully, it was a baby tooth.
Did you guys not brush your teeth as children? Why are your teeth breaking on everyday normal food?
You have children. You know that the number one thing that children don't do is brush their teeth.
Or shit in a toilet. But that's one thing I hate, is that I have to scoop crap out of my kid's ass every single day of my life. This next clip is actually not of any of the guests on the show. It's actually a story that I'm sharing of a road trip I took down to San Diego with Kabir Kabizi Singh and Jeff freaking Koenig. We went down. This road trip started in San Francisco, and then we drove just north of Los Angeles and stayed the night in some shitty little motel. And I think we got down there like 3 or 4 in the morning. I got one bed. Kabir got the other bed. And Jeff, being Jeff, somehow talked his way out of a bed and onto the floor. Because if you know Jeff, you'll understand. I mean, the guy does a very poor job of impersonating a human. But anyhow, we got up the next day. We went to San Diego. We did a show in San Diego at the American Comedy Company. And then afterwards, ritual for comics. We went out, we drank, and then we ended up at a Denny's around 3 o'clock in the morning, and just all hell broke loose. I mean, it was a nightmare scenario, but at the same time, a scenario that I loved. But listen to this clip, you'll understand what I mean, and you'll see, kind of get a glimpse of to what it's like to be a road comic, you know, aka somebody who's just on the road, hitting clubs, getting paid, and living that rock star lifestyle at Denny's at 3 in the morning with Jeff Koenig and Kabir Singh. Kabir and Jeff are like brothers. And I mean that in terms of the way they argue. They fight, they yell, they scream at each other, they punch each other like brothers would growing up. The problem with that is when you're at a restaurant after a show, and in this case, I mean, I use the term loosely, it's Denny's, but you're at a restaurant and these two idiots start drunkenly fighting each other, punching each other in the head, headlocks, throwing each other on tables, to the point where the entire Denny's staff at 3 o'clock in the morning has united to tell you to knock it off and get out. Now, I don't know if that's impressive to anybody else, but when you're in comedy, when you do things where your job is late at night and then you have to go to Denny's because that's the only place you can go at that time of day, you understand that the people that work at Denny's are pretty much dead inside, okay? They are the closest thing to zombies that you will ever, ever encounter on planet Earth. It's 3 o'clock in the morning and they're working that shift at Denny's. They don't care, okay? They've given up on life. They are pretty much just waiting to die, these people. You can't motivate these people. That's what I'm saying. You're not going to be able to get them to feel anything. Well, these two idiots were so crazy fighting up and down the San Diego Denny's that the entire staff united, okay? Jimmy Hoffa couldn't unite these people, okay? Not any union leader on planet Earth. Nick Barry could not unite these people. Yet these two individuals, these friends of mine, were fighting and carrying on so much that they united the entire staff to tell them to shut the fuck up and get the fuck out. And I was thinking about it. I was like, can you imagine at 2:55 in the morning on a Friday morning, technically, you're rolling up to go, you know what, I'm going to go to Denny's. And all you see are two guys wrestling, fighting, and throwing each other on tables through the window of Denny's. And then the third guy, a.k.a. me, is just eating all of the food like some sort of humongous fat ass, just eating all of the food off of all of the plates, some of which aren't even his plates. And that's the scene you see. You would walk up, look at that, and go, I'm never going in here again. The end of society is upon us. It was nuts. It was absolutely nuts. What they argue about doesn't even matter. They just create arguments and then fight and yell and scream. And I loved every second of it. I was loving it, man. It was a lot of fun. And that's what you do on the road. You got to keep yourself entertained. You got to keep yourself, you know, motivated to keep going, because otherwise you end up dead inside and working at a Denny's at 3 o'clock in the morning.
This is just another clip of Matt Somerville and myself. You know, we do list episodes every now and then where we talk about, you know, the top five worst Christmas movies or the worst fast food chains that are out there or whatever the topic that we want to talk about and do in list form. We have a lot of fun putting those lists together, and we will continue to do that going forward. I think that's actually Matt's favorite format when we do these podcasts. He loves doing these list things. In fact, I may have him do a list of all the different lists that he's liked doing so far. So he'll do a top five list of the different list programs that we've got. But this is just a snippet of from our top five worst holiday movies episode right around the holidays of last year. And again, you know, this is basically right when Matt became the permanent co-host of Predictably Drunk. And it's just a funny clip of him talking about midgets, a.k.a. dwarves, a.k.a. little people. And I think what makes it funny is that this guy works in Hollywood where it is unacceptable to not be politically correct. Yet in this clip, he's doing everything he can to be PC, and his non-PC views are starting to come out regardless. So pretty funny little clip. Check it out.
First of all, I want to say that, ludicrous. You can never really, sometimes you can, and in the case here, you can, but you can't always pinpoint the when someone sells out. The release of Fred Claus was exactly when Ludacris sold out. He plays an elf, and he is the DJ of Santa's Workshop. And
so he's keeping it real, as you say.
Well,
the gangster rapper Ludacris from ATL.
The issue is like, why couldn't they hire? It was a kick to the baby nuts of midgets everywhere, because why not just hire a midget actor to? I'm sorry, I'm saying that wrong. Dwarves,
also not correct, but go on.
Sure, okay. Little
people, little
folk.
Yes, little folk works.
Challenged vertically peoples. They, you know, why not just get one of them to do the job? Why do you have to hire an able-bodied? Well, they. I think their bodies work. I don't know how midgets work, but a full
exclusive.
Body,
Hollywood doesn't know how midgets work.
And finally, this last clip is from a recent show that I did at the Green Room at Tommy T's in Pleasanton, California. And I chose this clip to end the 50th show because it ties in so many things. First of all, Tommy T's has been a remarkable club for me. They allow me to do podcasts there in the Green Room. They allow me to do comedy there, even when I was shit piss poor at it. Thankfully, I'm not shit piss poor at it anymore. I'm just piss poor at it. I got rid of the shit. This interview was with Ellis Rodriguez, who is a legit, bona fide national headliner. Dude's been doing comedy for, I think, close to 10 years now. He's got a whole bunch of things, TV credits under his belt. He's going to be on Comedy Central with Kevin Hart later this year. Dude's doing a bunch of legit things out there, and he was nice enough to sit down and talk to me for about 20 minutes. He was also nice enough on the same night to headline the very first event in Predictably Drunk history. That was the Predictably Drunk Comedy All-Stars, held in early March of 2016. And it was a rousing success. About 125 folks there on a Tuesday night. If you're not a name, you can't get people on a Tuesday. And somehow we managed to get well over 100 people into this club and have just a killer lineup. A lot of the people that you hear already on these clips were on that show. Jeremy Curry, Chelsea Bierce, Ellis Rodriguez, who you're about to hear, Kabir Singh, who you heard stories about and who's been tearing it up everywhere as a writer for Family Guy, as well as his Comedy Central appearances and some of the other TV shows he's got coming up. It was just a killer lineup, and it was a really, really cool experience to have both the podcast and my stand-up comedy career finally clash and intersect in such a positive manner. So we're going to be doing more of those in the future. We'll be doing some more, obviously, just live podcasts altogether. And anyway, I'm going to quit sucking my own dick here and just listen to the clip. I'm going to go take a drink of a beer, and I'll be back afterwards to close this mother out. What you ever get in trouble in the military for being too
funny or just not taking anything too seriously, or were you pretty much you knew to pick and choose your spots, or how did that go?
Nah, I was a fuck up early.
You were a fuck up.
Once you become like a corporate CEO or whatever, you're in charge of people, so yeah. It does kind of change. But you still, there's just a thought. It's hard to even explain. Like anytime somebody comes to the unit,
yeah,
they got to check in with all their paperwork.
Okay.
So you would tell them, well, where's your ID10 Tango form? Right? So he's like, yeah, where's my ID10 Tango? He has no idea what an ID10 Tango is. And you berate him because he's a fucking idiot. Right. And everybody knows, and everybody starts looking at him like, yeah. So he has to go back to admin. So he trucks across base and goes to admin. And there's a guy sitting in admin. He knows exactly what an ID10 Tango form is. And he knows that it's not there. They keep that in the shop, right? Okay. So he has to come back to the shop. Once he gets to our shop, we're like, oh, yeah, yeah, they keep it actually right in here. Third shop. So then he goes to them. So he spent like basically half his day running across base. While every time getting there, somebody yelling at him like, right. Why he doesn't. And then somebody's like, please write this down. ID10 Tango. Idiot form. You know what I mean? There's like 1,000 of those.
See, I would have been a perfect mark because I was ID10 Tango. Got it, right? Yeah. And then you had to spell it out. So for the people that didn't follow what Ellis just said, ID10 Tango, it actually spells out idiot.
Idiot, yeah.
So his idiot form, and he's running around. But that seems like good-natured hazing that, I mean, kind of helps build a little
bit. There's 1,000 of those. Yeah. Getting e-tool qualified. Getting a can of BWP for the horn, you know. I actually went and got e-tool qualified, but I was like, a can of beep? No.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. It is the official clip show of Predictably Drunk, the 50th episode. I want to say thank you to the audience who's been listening to this since day one. I know there's a few of you out there that have listened from day one all the way to now. I really do appreciate it. I know Matt Somerville appreciates it. I want to thank Matt Somerville, who stupidly decided to jump on and do this and has to deal with me pestering him, you know, multiple times a week with show ideas and scheduling and all that shit that goes into this. I want to thank myself because without me, I wouldn't be here right now recording this in my underwear, talking to all of you through a microphone on my couch. God, that sounded pathetic, but also awesome at the same time. Honestly, folks, think about what I just said. I'm in my underwear recording this, and you're in your car going to work listening to this. I think I win in this scenario. As sad as it sounds for me to be doing this, I think I win. So with that, I'm going to go have a celebratory beer for my success. I'm going to bid you adieu. We've got some fun things coming up here on the podcast, so stick with us. And until next time, keep drinking. It's only appropriate that the man with the golden voice takes us out on the golden podcast. So, Ross, take her away, my friend.
You've been listening to Predictably Drunk, smart people talking about stupid things. Subscribe to us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And find the complete catalog on PredictablyDrunk.com. Until next time, keep drinking. Bitter from the life you labor.